On RSN 927's Racing Pulse, welcome to The Verdict.
Bruce McAvaney blew me away on Saturday morning when he said that he believes that Winx is the best horse that has ever raced in Australia, and he has her as number one.
I agree.
Can't remember who tweeted this on my timeline today, but they pointed out US Navy flag, worst tour of Australia since England in the 2006-07 Ashes.
I wanted to have to claw her way
to do
it. Do
you think there would be a better chance of the Autumn Sun running the Cox Plate if he was trained by a different trainer?
Oh, there'd probably be more serious thought of it, for sure. He could start this Saturday and not beat her the following Saturday in the Cox Plate.
Lloyd's quote was about, you got four runners and what's your threat? And he said, taking on Darren Weir these days is like taking on the West Coast Eagles and they've got 22 on the field instead of 18.
Welcome to a special edition of The Verdict on a Tuesday. And it is great to have the boys in the studio. Mickey Lynch, how are you, Mick?
I'm good, thank you. Got over the jet lag from returning from Perth.
It was only Perth.
I know, but that three-hour time difference, it does knock you about a bit. Well, it did me anyway.
We're used to spending half the year over in the UK gallivanting around Europe. And Matty Stewart, you were in the West last week. This weekend, it seems a long time ago now because we're on a Tuesday. What did you do over this weekend? Were you focused on Pakenham?
Oh, I had the option.
WA?
Healesville or Pakenham? Or stall, there was an invitation to go up there, or the couch.
The couch one.
The raging $1.04 favourite got the money. I actually agree with Lynchy. I know it's only Perth, and I know it's only 3.5 hours. I reckon it knocks you out of whack. I think there is an element of jet lag in Perth.
Yeah, well, problem is, you know, you fly at whatever time here, and you know, you're going out for dinner at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night in Perth, and it's midnight. Yeah. Your body's telling you.
Yeah,
it's weird.
So much to get through in this hour. Really looking forward to having a chat to Zach Purton and also Bob Peters over in the West about his superstar. And also Jamie Steer and John Massar. A lot of news out of the first half hour, which we want to follow up on the Autumn Sun. The argy-bargy between New South Wales and Victoria. And Jamie Steer also dropping a couple of little bombs there on maybe the future of training partnerships or trainers working for other trainers. And then at the end, he said that still this regimate, and I know we're going to discuss it more, looks like it will continue the saga. But first of all, let's have a quick chat to Paul Bloodworth, because he's a very busy man with lots of meetings that he has to get to. And today's an important day for Racing Victoria, because the nominations are now open for the All-Star Mile. How are you, Paul?
I'm good, thanks, Michael. And morning to Michael and Maddie.
Morning, Blood.
Yes, hello, Mr. Bloodworth.
So nominations open today. $500 to nominate your horse. When can the public start voting?
Yeah, that's right, Michael. So fantastic that the nominations for the All-Star Mile open today. And sort of greeting the Herald Sun this morning, really happy to see that Darren Weir is mounting an assault on the race with a number of his top-class horses. So noms close on the 15th of January. So trainers and owners have got around a month and a bit to nominate their horses for the race. And then approximately 6 days after that, on Monday the 21st of January, the voting opens for the fans. So, so there's a little bit of time in between the noms opening today and closing, and then fans have been able to vote. But we're all eagerly anticipating what that will develop, because, it's obviously a unique process for organising the field for Australia, and so it'll be very exciting to see what eventuates.
There'd be a wish list element to it, Blood, and interesting comments from Bob Peters about Arcadia Queenry, Regimate and all that sort of stuff, and that Sydney's a better option, but that doesn't necessarily mean that Regimate will be on the table in Sydney after the next week or so anyway, but there are horses that seem to be rising rapidly through the ranks. All the ratings experts are going crazy about Arcadia Queen and Galaxy Star, and also Tiakau Shark. There's limited interest, I think, in a couple of those camps for various reasons, but I guess you'll be aiming hard at those rising stars, two in Perth and one across the ditch.
Oh, absolutely, Matty, no question about it. And, yeah, I mean, I've heard what Bob said on the weekend in relation to Arcadia Queen. I got the sense it was more that, she's had a pretty long campaign in Perth and, she's still in her first preparation, so he's probably not looking to bottom her out too quickly. But, I mean, of course, should be fantastic to have. As would Galaxy Star, Tiakau Shark the same. I mean, look, I guess the race is only 2 weeks old, so a lot will develop once the nominations come through. I'm very hopeful that the voting process, and if horses get voted in the top 10, that could that could change Connections' opinion. I mean, it's probably a little bit flattering, if you like, that their horses have been voted as being very popular amongst the racing fans. So I guess we'll wait and see. But, yeah, clearly horses like Acadia Queen, Galaxy Star, Tiako Shark, and a little Bonnie Mare called Winx that you might have heard of is on the top of our list.
I'd imagine if you could get a horse from internationally or overseas, Beauty Generation would be up at the top of the list too. What's the situation re-quarantine? Is it likely to be rectified anytime soon that we can start to see these Hong Kong horses travel here and Australian horses travel there?
Well, there's two parts to that answer, Michael. There's two separate things, and one is Australian horses going to Hong Kong and competing in their international races, and the other part is Hong Kong horses coming to Australia. So the first part, we're hopeful that there'll be a solution that will allow Australian horses to go and compete on a short-term basis, if you like, in Hong Kong international races, and we'd be hoping that that'll be in place for their feature of sprints and the Queen Elizabeth in April next year. And that would simply be that there'd be heightened, if you like, biosecurity requirements for the for Australian horses whilst they're in Hong Kong, but then they would just do their 2 weeks pre-entry quarantine in Hong Kong and then their two weeks in Australia, as international horses normally do when they come here. The second part of that around Hong Kong horses coming to Australia is a little bit more complicated. That's kind of, if you like, the longer-term solution that the government's working on with the Hong Kong Jockey Club and the Chinese government at the moment. So I would say that we're very confident that the first part of that solution will be in place in the short term, which will allow Australian horses to go back to competing in Hong Kong. We only just missed the timeline, if you like, for the Hong Kong International meeting. But the other part of it, where Hong Kong horses get to come to Australia, I think that's a little bit further off, unfortunately. Oh, yeah. And it's disappointing because, you know, John Moore's been quite public saying that he'd love to come and compete in the All-Star Mile. So very disappointing that's not going to be possible next year.
Blood, just how is this going to actually work? Are you going to run a website? Is it going to be a text number? Will people have to pay to text to register a vote? Will it be a free online service? Will VRC or Racing Victoria nominate what it thinks is the best 50 of the noms and ask the public to vote on that? All these things, I think, are quite interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, good question, Mick. The voting opens on the 21st of January and there'll be an official All-Star Mile website which will be launched after Christmas and that will be the vehicle for people to vote. It'll be free to vote and voting will put you in the draw to in the race to win $500,000 in prize money that'll be available across the 14 runners in the race. So any horse that's nominated can be voted on. So we're not, you know, we could get 200, 300 knots. And any of those horses, people will be able to vote on from the 21st of January. So it'll be just really interesting to see how that all eventuates. I note, as you know, the race is based on a race called the Arima Kinnan in Japan, and the voting only just closed for that. They had over 1 million votes for the race, which is quite astonishing. But the horse that ran third in the voting is actually a horse that's won the last three Nakayama Grand Jumps in Japan. He's obviously a very popular horse, and from what I understand is he's going to take his place in the field. So we'd be, you know, we probably won't have jumpers, I don't think, nominated for the race or voted on, but, you know, I'd be hoping that a horse like Viandon, who won five or six country cups last season and, you know, is a bit of a fan favourite, might be a horse that nominates and, you know, the people of the Wimmera Mallee might get behind him and get him into the field.
Good on you, Blood. We'll follow it as it all continues to unfold. Thanks for having a chat.
Cheers, guys.
There's just a couple of issues with it, and this will lead into the next discussion about these new Sydney-Melbourne, the Sydney-Melbourne thing. You know, in an ideal world, if there wasn't so much clutter on the calendar on these new pop-up races, you would reasonably expect a $5 million race with advance notice at our greatest race course at a good time of year. You'd expect Arcadia Queen, wouldn't you? You'd expect Galaxy Star, you'd expect Tiako Shark, you'd expect Winx. But there's so many other options, and that's the issue with all this clutter, is you put on a race that should attract everyone to put on the best possible race. And there are these other factors going on at the moment that can dismantle that. And that's what's annoying about this race, is this is the inaugural running of this massive race worth massive money at Flemington. But you're going to struggle to get the horses you really want for other reasons. And I've got a real issue with this. I think I've got an issue with the public vote. I just don't know. I think it's a distraction that might... Look, I don't want that Country Cup horse
in
this race.
Well, I don't think
I don't want that horse in this
race. As much as we love the Country Cup battler, he would get lapped up against some of those.
It's a tokenistic thing that will frustrate people, I think.
He would, of course. But it's interesting. I think the point you make about the clutter is very, very valid. I mean, I was part of the gaggle of media hacks who surrounded Bob Peters after Arcadia Queen's extraordinary win on Saturday. And I don't know if he's got a deadpan sense of humour. I don't know the guy, but I put the question to him about the All-Star Mile. Will that be a target? And he said, what's that? So, I mean,
there's
I don't
so
know
many
if he
other
was joking.
Being thrown
yeah.
up, isn't
I don't
there?
Know if he was joking or he genuinely didn't actually know of what. And given they're over there, it's pretty isolated. He might not.
But isn't this the number one frustration of what's going on now? Is this the very thing that conversation with Paul Blubworth, and this isn't nothing against Paul Blubworth, but it was just the issue of, well, gee, can we get this horse? Can we get that horse? And there's a quarantine issue which no one can control. That is the fundamental issue with what's going on at the moment. This war between the borders is no race has got, or no event has got clear space that it's entitled to, given the basics of the race. That's what's frustrating.
Look, it's very unlikely, but let's just say the field of 10, I think 14 in the field, 10 of public vote. What would they do if the top 10 public voted horses were rated 100 and less?
They have to be rated to a certain level.
No, they've got to be 75. Yeah.
And then there's four wild cards that Racing Victoria can invite. You spoke of Bob Peters and how you had a chat to him over there after the stunning win of Arcadia Queen on the weekend. And Bob Peters joins us on the line. Now, congratulations, Bob. What a fabulous victory it was.
Yes, it surprised me, that one.
Is she up there with the best? And could she potentially be the best horse you've ever had?
She could be. I think the best horse we ever bred was Old Comrade, and at this stage in her career she's done just a little bit more than him, but then he went on and did it and she has to do it.
Well, he did it in the East, which is brings us to the next point, I guess, too. He beat Northerly in an Australian Cup. And he went to Sydney, I remember. And I remember Lindsay Smith got lost on the way to Sydney and ended up in some valley somewhere. The East is now beckoning Bob, and I guess that's all important to us in this discussion is how and when and if it's possible. And you mentioned the issue with Regimate, which in Sydney, which may not be an issue by this time next week because they might have banned Regimate in Sydney. So that's another factor as well.
Yes, that could happen. At the time, I didn't realise that they were going to make a decision shortly. And so, you know, I sort of made the comment, probably shouldn't have, but, you know, I felt a bit sorry for the trainers in Victoria.
Bob, you did mention that she's done an awful lot in a very short time and that the Melbourne sort of February-March time would probably come too soon. So if we do see her in the East, it would just be, irrespective of Regimate, it would be much more likely because of a spelling issue that you go for Sydney if you came at all this year.
No, I'm not sure what I'm going to do. She's enjoying herself at the farm now, and she'll tell us, you know, when she's ready to come back into work. But I have tried before to get them from, you know, our carnival to Melbourne for the autumn, and it's very hard to do. It's a short time frame. They can't really have a spell and get there.
Did you pull it off with Old Comrade? Unless the dates in Perth were different in his era, because he did come to Flemington in the autumn and win, didn't he?
Well, he was a different sort of horse. When you get to an Old Spice, you can do anything with them. Mm. All they want to do is eat and work, and we're not sure whether this filly could do that or not. Although to this stage, she's held up and done everything we've asked her to do.
We've been talking about the proliferation of these new pop-up races, as Maddie Stewart calls them, and one of those is this Golden Eagle, which is worth $7.5 million on Derby Day in the spring for four-year-olds, which Arcadia Queen will be. What would be more enticing for you, a man who's been in racing all his life, a possible tilt at a Group 1 race, maybe a time-honoured race like a Cox Plate, or a restricted race worth $7.5
million? I'd always have an ambition to win a Cox Plate. I think that's probably the best race in Australia. But on the other hand, she's already won a Group 1. It's not going to really help her pedigree much now. But and the money looks very good in Sydney. So, I've got no idea what we're going to do yet.
Just timeframes, Bob, because everyone's just hanging off your every word because we all are of the belief that you have the heir apparent to Winx. So when do you make a call on it? I know it's a tight turnaround. When do you make a call on it? And when do you make a call on Galaxy Star, the stablemate, as to what she may do in the next 6 months?
Well, Galaxy Star, provided everything goes well, will start Saturday week again. 2,100-metre weight for age race. And Arcadia Queen will, you know, tell us when she's, what she's going to do. If she made a real, jump down to the ground, let's put it that way, in the next few weeks, we could think about something. But at this stage, it's she'll spell, and we'll look at the traditional way of coming back for the spring.
And, Bob, we see your jockey, William Pike, dominate so much in Perth. If you did bring her or any of them east, would, is William now at the stage where, you know, you would want him riding these horses in the east and establishing himself over here like so many great West Australian jockeys in the past have done?
No, I don't think William would be doing that. But, we've got a sort of a loose arrangement whereby if he wants to ride them and they're going well enough, he can go over and ride them. Between us, we'll work that out.
Bob, you're a revered figure in racing. You've been around for many decades. Do you have a personal view on the war that's going on between New South Wales and Victoria and the one-upmanship and the lack of collaboration? Is it something you've observed from across the other side of the country?
Yes, we find it very interesting over here. It doesn't affect us very much at all. And I think what happened with the Everest sort of proved that it can be done, what's going on at the moment.
Well, Bob, we spoke to John Massara earlier and he indicated that it's unlikely that the Autumn Sun will be around for a Cox Plate tilt. He'll most likely be in the breeding barn. Winx may well be retired, so it would pave the way for a horse like Arcadia Queen for a Cox Plate tilt. So at this stage, you haven't made plans, but it is forefront of your mind?
Well, it'd be lovely to think you had a horse good enough to run in it. Certainly would have to be very strongly considered. And as I said before, there's a lot of water under the bridge before then. There's a lot to go on, and she has to come back. And there's lots of things that have to happen. And you've got to have a little bit of luck.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Congratulations on the win. I was going to say, can you leave us with one horse for the punters out there over the next couple of weeks that we can follow?
10-1 or better.
They never go off at 10-1 if they're in the Cerise.
No pressure, Bob.
Well, we're jumping your Hurtful Brother up in a right up in grade, so maybe you could keep an eye on him.
What's his name?
Arcadia Prince.
Lovely. We'll be following Arcadia Prince. Well done, Bob.
Thank you.
Bob Peters, he's a man of few words, but, I get the inkling that the Cox Plate could be on the radar. He said it's a race he's always revered and a race he's always loved to win. No Winx, no Autumn Sun.
I suspect no All-Star Mile too.
I wouldn't think the All-Star Mile, but I think Michael's on the money there. I've got the vibe from him there. The Cox Plate would be particularly a target.
But that's fine. You know what? Why not target a traditionally wonderful target? You know,
it'd be great. You know,
ignore the pop-ups.
Well, it is Australia's premier weight for age race, and it has Group 1 status. All these other pop-up races, these multi-million dollar kind of new initiatives, they have no graded status whatsoever. And that is still important, particularly for fillies. She's won her Group 1, but she's won it in the West. If she can win her Group 1 in the East, it will be a much bigger, significant statement, I think.
Going to take a break. On the other side of this, we'll discuss the Tabcorp pullout and the fallout in the past 7 days, re the Golden Eagle. And then we'll also want to discuss Hong Kong. Zach Purton, we'll have a chat to him. And what an unbelievable performance it was. The VCAT finding yesterday with Jared McLean, and maybe what the future holds with the setup down at Wearies, with Jared being the foreman and also a trainer in his own right. Keep your SMSs coming through too. 0416 90 50 52.
RSN 927's Racing Pulse presents The Verdict.
Welcome back to The Verdict. It's been a big week in Australian racing with the announcement of the Golden Eagle and the subsequent battle that has been drawn between Victoria and New South Wales. We saw Amanda Elliott and also Neil Wilson issue very strong statements about the encroachment into the Melbourne Cup week. That's then been refuted by Peter Valandis. And then in the last 24 to 48 hours, we see that Tabcorp have also become involved. An article by Chris Roots in The Age today saying that they have pulled $500,000 of sponsorship. Quotes from Peter Valandis, which are extremely strong. And I quote to say, "This is unprecedented, but I'm confident the race will go ahead with another sponsor. We are already talking to different sponsors." He then goes on to say that Tabcorp is a national company and not a Victorian company, and we have a strong relationship with them. They should be considered, or they should be concerned, this doesn't destroy them. We are continuing to work through a process, and I think in a couple of days we will have a result. Now, Peter Valandis is unavailable this morning. We'll speak to him next week. Brian Kruger will join me in the studio tomorrow, the chairman of Racing Victoria. They're staggering statements from the chief of
strong words,
Racing New South Wales.
He's demanding support. He's basically saying, we're connected to you for this reason, and no matter what we do, you must support us for that reason. It's just, it's insanity.
Interesting to me, though, it's 500 grand. It's only 7% of the total 7 million pool, isn't it? Where's the rest of the cash coming from for this $7.5 million race?
That's a bit of an issue as well.
Yeah, you know, but look, it's hard to look at this and assume, A, there hasn't... I mean, Tabcorp is a company that operates in Victoria and New South Wales, and it's hard to imagine there hasn't been some input, at least, from their Victorian shareholders and stakeholders. And
Richie, I reckon this comes down to a couple of very simple things, and one of them is when you think of how massive and how beyond the VRC in Flemington and everything the VRC Carnival is. It's a globally significant event. It's like Wimbledon, it's like Royal Ascot, and just like those events, it has earned its right to protected space. Everyone benefits from the Melbourne Spring Carnival. Sydney benefits. Its crowds are massive through our carnival in a mirroring sort of effect and all that sort of thing. I just think it's earned the right to protected space, and any attempt to chip away at it can be damaging, and it's just not right. It's not ethical, you know. The French wouldn't put on an all-star tournament during Wimbledon. Newmarket wouldn't put on a big race during Royal Ascot because they understand.
I think Newmarket, there's nothing to stop Newmarket or York proposing, say, to put on a massive event.
They never would, though.
But there's nothing to stop them. But the significant factor here, there as opposed to here, is it would have to go through the Pattern Race Committee and the BHA, who control ultimately
that programme,
and they would stop it. They wouldn't. Okay.
No, but they wouldn't even propose it.
Yeah, but we haven't got a body like that with any teeth to stop it here.
Now, gentlemen, I'm just going to do a timeout, and we are going to come back to this, and I want to continue argy-bargy. The reason is that Zach Purton's just called in from Hong Kong. He's about to jump on horses for trials, so we've got a small window to have a chat to him. So let's just change strides briefly and have a chat to Zach Purton about his unbelievable performance at the international meeting on Sunday. Zach, thanks for having a chat to us this morning. Congratulations once again. You must be absolutely blown away to think in just a matter of 6 years you now have equaled Gerard Mosse for the most amount of Group 1 wins in this famous carnival.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's hard enough to win one of these races, but fortunately for me, it's been a great meeting for me.
Tell us about Beauty Generation and how good this horse is.
Well, he showed everyone on Sunday that he's the real deal. He's been doing that all season. He just seems to be getting better and better with his racing now. He's a lot more mature. He knows his job. He knows what he needs to do. He knows what he wants to do. And he's just going out there and delivering. So it was an awesome performance. And hopefully he can keep doing that for a little while longer.
Is he the best you've ridden?
He is, yes, for sure.
How, I mean, it's unlikely we're going to get to see him in Australia, Zach, because of the quarantine issues. How do you think he'd fare against the best at his distance range in this country?
Oh, I think he'd fare pretty well. His rating tells you that he'd be very competitive if he was to come down there. The owners are having a party tonight, and no doubt myself and the trainer will be pushing to try and go somewhere, and hopefully Australia can sort out their quarantine issues.
What about over that distance against the likes of Winx?
Well, everyone's asking that question, aren't they? But, you know, she's the highest rated horse in the world, so you would think that she'd have the wood on him.
He was so dominant over the mile. I know he's a brilliant miler. Do you think he could get 2040 around Moonee Valley?
He actually holds the track record here over 2200 as well. Obviously, he was bought as a Derby horse. He did run well in the Derby.
Mm.
But it has been since John's dropped him back to the mile, but he has been more effective. He uses that stamina that's in him and his good set of lungs to bowl along at a good speed and keep going. Whether we could stretch it out to 2,000 metres, I'm not quite sure, but I don't know if we'll ever see that happen anyway.
Is the likely next target the big Hong Kong meeting in a few months' time, in about March, April? Is that the, before we talk about going anywhere else around the world, is that what will be the logical next mission and then think about other things after that?
I'm not sure, because Dubai comes up in March. That's before our big Champions Mile meeting, I think, is in May or April. So there's every chance that we could see him over there before we see him in the race here.
And, Zach, just you've ridden a winner at Royal Ascot, I think, haven't you? How do you reckon he might go, Queen Anne Stakes, something like that?
Yeah, I think it'd be good for him. Nice big long straight there, big striding horse, a little bit uphill. I don't think that would hurt him. A little bit of cut in the ground, I don't think that'll hurt him either. So it's the type of race that would be suitable, but whether the owners want to go there, as you know, they don't race for the most amount of prize money over there. It's more so the prestige. So I don't know. Everything is on the table at the moment, but it'll be up to the owners.
And a great win in the Vase too on Exultant, where it was a great fight with Joe Moreira. I know you're going to go and jump on trials, but just quickly, we've got some good news which has come through, or improving news, that Ty Anglin, for the family's sake, has returned back here to Australia as well. And I know it must have been a difficult time for all his mates over in Hong Kong as well. No doubt you went and saw him. What's his spirits like when he was over in Hong Kong?
Oh, understandably, it's a very tough time at the moment, but he's in pretty good spirits, and it's just nice that he can go home and be close to his family.
Good on you, Zach. Appreciate your time this morning.
Anytime. Cheers, fellas.
Zach Purton, champion Hong Kong jockey. And just on that, a statement was released yesterday by the Hong Kong Jockey Club saying that Ty has returned to Australia, and he's gone into ICU near his home in Sydney. And I think we will get more information later in the week. So our thoughts are with Ty Anglin's family, as well as he has now returned home to Australia. That quarantine issue, and there's a lot of SMSs coming through. Gee, we need to get that sorted out. Could you imagine if we got a horse like Beauty Generation here? We talk about those taking on Winx and the likes, but that's what racing needs to take it to the next level, to elevate it. It's the superstars taking on the superstars.
Absolutely. You just, you know, you need them up against each other as often as possible. Interesting point you made about that horse holding the 2200 metre record in Hong Kong. I don't know if they run their distance races at a dawdle there like they do here, but you know, it's an interesting fact that suggests a mile and a quarter in Moonee Valley wouldn't be beyond him.
Yeah, absolutely. Just back to what we were talking about before, and I understand exactly what you're saying about the technical side of it wouldn't allow, but what I'm saying is more in a deeper understanding from these other jurisdictions, that they know when their time is and they benefit, and the ones that elevate to the level of the Melbourne Spring Racing Carnival, which is the greatest economic contributor in Australia for a sport that everyone benefits. There's no way, as with those examples of Royal Ascot and French and Newmarket, the benefit of the massive event is so huge that it deserves to be untouchable. It just deserves it.
I agree from a Victorian point of view, but I can see New South Wales' argument. The Peter Volandis and John Massara even said, well, hang on, we did it with the Everest on Coffee Guinness Day, and the TV ratings and the turnover was enhanced. And it's purely and simply a fact that Sydney and Racing New South Wales are trying to dovetail on the coattails.
They already do, though, Michael. They already benefit enormously.
Improve their money. Where I have a major issue is, though, if you're going to put ridiculous amounts of money, $7.5 million for a restricted race, for just four-year-olds, that's got me staggered. But put it on that way, where it's going to get lost. Mm. Why not put it in a different week, a week later, and you could get the generation of the public and the horses in that as well. The other thing is, we're talking about Rose Hill here. Like, Rose Hill, lovely racetrack, terrible area. Like, it's a nightmare to get to Rose Hill. So it's not in the heart of Sydney. So I'm just, there's a lot of questions which I can't wait to speak to Peter Vallandis about.
I think in some ways, though, we need to see this in a much broader context of, I guess, just the way the economy works these days, the way culture, society, even sport works in terms of disruption. I mean, the last decade has been the disruptor decade. We've seen it with Uber, we've seen it with pop-up restaurants, we see it in all facets of society. And in a way, Vallandis is, so far, he's the first real racing disruptor who's trying to create new events to shake things up. Now, some of them work, but some of them actually have, in other fields of life, created more issues, I mean, you know, than they've solved. I think what really needs to happen is we need to preserve the spirit of disruption and adventure that Vallandis is bringing, but bring a regulatory supervisory body who can get him to work alongside the establishment so that the disruption and the historical events can dovetail perfectly to create a perfect disruptive storm for everyone.
Yeah, no, and I totally agree with that sentiment. The only problem is there seems to be a perception out there that because of the success of the Everest, which still has to stand the test of time, there are still issues with the Everest which will confront it in coming
years. But I think the success of the Everest was in the race type. Yeah. And we could talk about the slots, who's going to take the slots. The sprinters, which are the, you know, Australia is known for.
The slot issue had nothing to do with the success of it.
No. But I tell you what it had was 6 months of who is taking what horse. Whereas this race, you don't have that. Other races, you don't have that. The All-Star Mile will have that. So it all built up media generation and media speculation.
I just think there's a terribly simplistic view that whatever Vallandis does off the back of the Everest, because it's disruptive, everyone loves a rebel, that he seems to he wins on personality politics a bit. You know, he's the disruptor and the rebel. Giles is boring. The VRC are snobs. So therefore, let's back in the one who's going to at least make life interesting. It doesn't mean you can't scrutinise it and work. Just torn it apart in the three races that, you know. It's all right to be a disruptor and Uber, and that's fine, but you kind of, it's got to stack up, right? The $1 million 2-year-old race run before Christmas is a nonsense. They're undeveloped babies. It's run at a time of year where everyone's watching here. A, pointless. The 4-year-old only race, as you said, the fieldering system with colts going to stud, and it's on a big day down here. You're not going to get the field to warrant the prize money. Pointless. The $1 million race on Cox Plate Day, that may take 1 3-year-old away from the race that everyone's watching anyway, it's pointless. It's, you know, it's all right to be a disruptor, Lynchy, and I totally agree with you, but why if it's pointless?
I think the Everest, as Michael, has talked about it, it's probably a bit like the Chinese leader who said in the 70s when asked about the effects of the French Revolution, it's a bit too early to tell. it certainly is with the Everest. 2 years, I think. Yes, the Everest brought a lot of media hype, and it continues to do so over the slots issue. But the reality is we've had it for 2 years. We've had the same horse win it on a bog track. Mm. I just don't know. And when you get a superstar, he's going to come along. There'll be another absolutely dominant sprinter. Maybe not a Black Caviar, but some horse that will be 3 or 4 lengths better than the rest. And I just think with these kind of races, there always are going to be those issues. The public vote one is a bit different because, you know, that's not necessarily, people aren't having to pay millions to get into that. And it's a different kind of context.
And there's a feeling out there too that if you can't justify an obscene $7 million race that's getting funding from whoever, there is that grassroots element as well. I mean, I love the big, fancy, expensive races because they have a big branding effect and all that sort of stuff. But for every ridiculous $7.5 million race you create, there is going to be a very big reaction at grassroots levels to what the hell are you doing with your money.
Actually, just on, where's the hype about the Pegasus? Do you remember? We talked about that on this show, the inaugural year when, was it American
California
Pharaoh,
Chrome.
California Chrome, these went for it. I mean, I haven't heard a dicky bird about it, but isn't it only about four weeks away? You know,
a lot of SMSs coming through here. One of them says the main issue I have with the New Sydney races is the $1 million 2-year-old race. It's way too early in the season for that kind of money with immature horses. Another one saying here that when Volandi said at the press conference that Rosehill had world-class facilities, he's lost all credibility. I've been to the Golden Slipper the last 10 years, yet to experience any type of hospitality, and it has one road out of the track. Cheers, Dan. I concur. Rosehill, it's a nightmare to get to and from, and the facilities are old. Track itself, lovely. But to have this type of race, I don't know how they're going to expect to get 50,000 out to Rosehill. Others are talking about Volandi's. He's a bully. I don't know about whether he's a bully.
Yes, he is.
But
well, he's a forceful personality.
He's a forceful personality. And then there's a lot of SMSs also coming through regarding the battle between. Now, I've just been sent a direct message tweet, and this is, I would imagine, timing to get media. but Unibet has sent a letter to Peter Volandi's saying Unibet Australia is happy to sponsor the Golden Eagle to the value of $500,000, which is what Tabcorp has saying that they will no longer do it. So Unibet is now trying to get in. And I wonder if that was the veiled threat that Peter Volandi's was putting through to say that they should be concerned that this doesn't destroy them, because we know in New South Wales it's a monopoly for Tabcorp sponsorship, not corporates. So I think that may well be the veiled threat that Peter Volandi's was alluding to.
If you don't think he's a bully, go back to the Opera House issue with Alan Jones. Reflect on that.
No, Alan Jones is a bully.
Volandi's role in that.
Well, next week when we get to speak to Peter Volandi's, I'll put that to him, because I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. I don't think he's a bully. I think he's a very strong character.
I think Jones was the one who emerged
Jones was a bully
very
poorly. Anyway, we're talking about reheating old soup there. We're going to take a break. When we come back, there is plenty more.
What about the analogies? What about the phrases coming out?
We'll be back on The Verdict.
We're the spirit of racing. RSN 927. RSN 927's Racing Pulse presents The Verdict.
Welcome back to The Verdict. Plenty of issues to discuss and plenty of SMSs coming through. Keep them coming. 0416 90 50 52. Got an SMS here. Re the Jared McLean and Weir situation. The McLean Weir setup is akin to Bolton being head coach at Carlton while still being assistant at Hawthorn, which wouldn't be tolerated by any fans or administrators, which is similar to how most of us punters feel. That's from Brett in Brisbane. Now, interesting, when we had Jamie Steer on before, he has mooted that this will be a setup that Racing Victoria are keen to look at in the future.
It's interesting, isn't it, Lynchy? Like, yeah, there's two ways of looking at it. Like, it's results is basically what most people really want. And if you've got horses trained by Darren Weir and they're essentially trained by Jared McLean, but the result is a Weir-like result of just continually winning in that. But the other thing too is if I'm training, getting horses trained by Darren Weir, I kind of expect Darren Weir to be training them as well to some degree. You know?
Well, is this a sort of backdoor way that Racing Victoria is going to come at not capping stable numbers in a kind of roundabout backdoor way, saying you can have... You can't have, well, you can have 500 horses on your books, but you're going to have to train them all yourself.
Yeah.
You can't out the pre-training to someone else. You can't have a foreman here. You can't have a yard there. You're going to, you know, or if that person is a foreman in a particular other district, they cannot work for themselves.
I don't think there's any issues about Foreman looking after barns. As this MS comes through, it says, "Hello, team. I feel the Jared suspension is too harsh. If we're comparing it with other sports. If he is to make a decision between training and being foreman for Darren Weir, I can see all of his horses being transferred to Weir and him becoming foreman for Weir, which may well be a likely scenario. If Jared McLean says, I've got 20 horses of my own, yet I can look after Darren Weir and have a regular paycheck.
But the regulator is there to put in reasonable parameters, and sometimes an arrangement pushes through those parameters. And I think this is a great example of one where, in inverted commas, for integrity reasons, the idea that a trainer has multiple stables and things like that, that there's want to be a very stringent monitoring.
Is there another setup like that where we've got a trainer in their own right working as a four-person for another trainer?
Can't think of one, really.
There are a lot of pre-trainers.
There's trainers who will be a foreman for someone and have one or two little project horses of their own. That's
Matt Lindsay, Colin Little, he's only got a couple of horses.
Yeah, that sort of thing. Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, it'll be interesting to see what transpires there.
The penalty wasn't harsh, though, because...
6 weeks, he pleaded guilty.
Because he lied. I mean, and Jared's a good guy and a good trainer and, you know, all that sort of stuff. He lied to them. He lied to the stewards. Why did he lie? Well, the horse was not where it should have been. There are rules to say that the horse should be in a certain place at a certain time. And when you create a grey area of misinformation to stewards, then there is an integrity, potential integrity issue if that's the way you conduct your relationship with the stewards. So, of course, they have to come down hard on him.
Absolutely. And I think he admitted that when he pled guilty. And you do the crime, you do the time. Interesting case which is on at the moment. It's almost a macabre case, and it's a very disturbing case with Shane Bottomley, and that will be, it's on as we speak, 9:30 at the Rad Board, where it's alleged that he disposed of the carcass of a horse he trained and also performed his own autopsy. So we'll wait to find out what transpires from that.
He'd been watching Silent Witness, has he?
Well, it's like American Horror Story. Well, it's like something you see in a film.
It's like Seven. You remember Seven, that murder movie?
Yeah.
You know what?
Brendan Paltrow came out at the wrong end of that.
If it is true, it's not funny at all, because racing cannot afford to have that type of activity. So we will wait to find out what it is. But if that is found to be the case, I'd expect a pretty harsh.
I might even give Shane Bottomley a ring and ask, mate, do you want to clarify what was going on here?
Well, yeah, he may have had a reason why he needed to do it or thought he needed to do it.
Yeah, it's a macabre image, but it doesn't. Yeah. It might require a little bit of explanation, the whole thing.
Well, hopefully we'll get that explanation. SMS is coming through saying that it's disappointing that we may not see the autumn sun racing on in the spring. This is the future of racing, unfortunately, though, with the breeding dollars on the table.
Well, I listened extensively to your interview and I found it fascinating interview, Michael, and you certainly got John Mazzara to talk a lot, and it is so disappointing. But but it shows up completely at that level of sport. This isn't a sport. This is a financial business transactional function. I mean, they paid, I don't know, how much did they pay for their share in the Autumn Sun?
Something with a lot of zeros.
I don't know if it was made public.
So they've made a very large investment, and it's sad, isn't it? I mean, what's he going to stand at? How much will he stand for? What will his fee be?
They haven't made that public.
I don't know. Let's just say 50 grand or whatever, you know. So he services, you know, 10 mares, that's $500,000, isn't it? He services 100 mares, that's $5 million. He can do that and then go and service a lot more, and it's a hell of a lot more than he can win on the track. And it's just the economics of the business at that end. But it is sad from a sporting point of view.
And it goes to show the folly and the lack of range of knowledge that Volandi's had when he launched this $7.5 million Golden Eagle, is that the horses he's pitching for, like the glamour ones, like the Autumn Sun, are always, even despite his oodles of money, are always going to find the stud option more lucrative than the racing on option.
That I really hope Bob Peters does bring Arcadia Queen to the Cox Plate to show that status, history, black type, Group One is more important than just... These are very wealthy people, you know. I mean, the difference between $5 million in a Cox Plate and $7 million isn't going to make a lot of difference to a guy like Bob Peters.
Not at all.
That's right.
Got to quickly make mention of Lee Friedman, Hall of Fame trainer, 5-time Melbourne Cup winning trainer. He heads over to Singapore and he wins the premiership in his first full year training over there. So that's an accomplishment for Lee Friedman on an ever-growing CV. He lost his way, or lost his passion, for quite some time. He seems to have been fully rejuvenated over in Singapore.
When I was at the Herald Sun a few years ago, Lee wrote a first-person piece on his battle with depression. And it was the most amazing, self-revealing sort of story. And so whilst he was the megastar trainer, he was also dealing with a lot of issues of being successful too early. And then what do you do later? You know, where do you go from there? And he's found a target, an achievable thing in Singapore that's given him a bit of satisfaction. So, no, it's an amazing, when you look back at his story.
Well, it is, and the Aussies dominate there, don't they? You know, in the jockey ranks.
Vlad the Impaler, he was the champion jockey.
Just nosed out Michael Rudd. Rudd.
Speaking of Lee Friedman and his public, I suppose, speaking about his battle with depression, we've got to say well done to his nephew, because Sam Friedman, on the weekend, walked 50 kilometres in total silence. And Benny Day, my producer, told me that he's raised more than $10,000 for the Black Dog Foundation, which is a a brilliant effort. We might have a chat to Sam later in the week to see how he's pulled up from that 50-kilometre walk in total silence.
Yeah, his father spends his whole life in total silence, Anthony.
He did say he tried to get him on board, and the silence part almost got him over the line.
Yeah, exactly. It'd be wonderful. Phones off. And just a quick one on, I know it's a boring one, but Regimate. I've got a piece on just talking to a vet, talking to Peter Moody, reflecting back on his comments of a few months ago. There's a little bit of an elephant in the room about Regimate with this decision pending from Racing Australia. Even though Barry is in China, he gets around a bit, Barry, doesn't he?
Certainly does.
Is it absolutely proven that injectable Regimate is not in some way enhancing the performances of these fillies and mares who are cutting a swathe through world racing? You know, I spoke to a leading vet and others about it, and they don't know. They're not saying that it does, but they are not convinced that it doesn't. And that's an interesting
discussion. Well, sadly, this is going to drag on a lot longer. Listening to Jamie Steer this morning, he said that the indication from a meeting that Racing Victoria had last week is that they want to continue with more tests. So it doesn't seem like there is going to be an impending decision.
I think the whole thing is a sort of much broader. I mean, if you have a bad cold and you're a footballer and you take Sudafed or something which has got the wrong traces in it, you get a 2-year ban or something, you know, because it's deemed to have enhanced your performance because you had a cold, you take that drug, you don't feel so bad, you can play. If fillies and mares come into season and their hormones go mad, and that's natural, isn't it? That's a natural state. So if you then actually administer a drug which prevents that cycle, aren't you performance enhancing them by stopping what's natural?
I think you're performance enhancing from their lowest level, though. Like, if you say your performance enhancing analogy, if I had a cold and now I don't, but the starting point was a cold, it wasn't you in reasonable physical health. So there's a yeah, I know what you're saying, but it's a, when they say performance enhancing, they mean off your normal base, not off a cold or not off being in season.
It doesn't seem like we're going to get an answer anytime soon. We are going to have a chat to Andrew Nicol from the Trainers Association on the show tomorrow as well. Maddie, just before you leave us, yesterday we had a great day counting down to the ID 18, and you're going to do a lovely story on the RSN website.
Yeah, I'm hoping to get hold of Gavin Lang, who's someone that I've had a lot of history with over the years. My father delivered all of the Lang children at the Bacchus Marsh War Memorial Hospital over the years. So we've had a lot to do with the Langs, and I knew Gavin right back from when I was working at a stock feed store in Bacchus Marsh for the late, great Alan Tubbs, who was a great mate of Gavin's. And Gavin has never, let's not preempt this, I'm trying to get hold of him, but anyway. Gavin is probably the greatest ever harness racing driver in Australia, but he's never won an Inter-Dominion pacing final.
He calls himself the Frankie Dettori.
Yeah, cannot pull it off.
Of the Inter-Dominion, you know, because he can't win it.
That's right. So, I'm looking forward to having a chat to Gavin, because there is a bit to talk about, and the third generation sitting in the corner here too, so of deliveries, Stuart deliveries. My son Ollie's in here, gandering at what we're doing. But I'm really looking forward to talking to Gavin. And one of the big stories going into Saturday night will be, can Gavin, who's now in his 60s, finally win the Inter-Dominion final?
Well, it'll be a great piece, and we're hoping that you do get hold of him.
glad you think it's already a great piece.
We can't wait for the countdown to ID 18. Matty Stewart and myself will be trackside at Melton Tabcourt Park on Saturday night. Lynchy, always great to get you in
here. So will Lynchy. He's coming too.
You're already yawning. It's time for your bed. That 3.5 hour time difference, that 3 hour time difference is knocking you around. Look forward to seeing all your written words in The Age this week.
Thank you indeed. Keep buying the paper. Keep us journos in jobs.
Well, you work for Channel 9 now, so
I do. I've got a good head for radio, though. If I'm now at Channel 9.
Good on you, Lynchy. Tomorrow's show, make sure you tune in, because Racing Victoria Chairman Brian Kruger will be in the studio from 9 o'clock. So much to speak to the Chairman of Victorian Racing about. We'll also have a look at the Wyong Magic Millions tomorrow. And don't forget the ID 18 panel from 9:30, counting down to the big race on Saturday night. Hope you've enjoyed the show. If you're having a punt today, good luck. We'll be back tomorrow from 8:30.